start wars and never fight them. And those who fight wars, they never like them. Recite them, yes they can. But those of us who just fight loss, we live and die them. But I know they're never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. They're never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. They're never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies. It's time. Time to go home. Don't take our boys away, no. Don't take our girls away, no. Don't take our boys away, no. Don't take our girls away, no. Don't take our boys away, no. Don't take our girls away, no. Don't take our boys. Boston, I want to see you all jumping. Those who build walls are pretending, yes they are, that forever they can defend them. No, 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 no. And those who dance free can build fountains, yes they can. But those of us who just let them run free,
what?
We can move mountains, but I know they're never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies. It's time. It's time to go home. Don't take our boys away, no. Take our girls away, no. Don't take our boys away, no. Don't take our girls away, no. Don't take our boys away, no. Don't take our girls away, no. Don't take our boys away. Boston, I want to see you all jumping. Push it! Never saw it coming. How many people never heard the cry? How many people gotten pushed aside? How many people never saw the doves fly? How many people never said goodbye? How many people never saw the wrong? How many people got to sing the song? How many people never heard the cry? How many people gotten pushed aside? How many people never saw the doves fly? How many people never said goodbye? How many people never saw the wrong? How many people got to sing the song? How many people never saw it coming? How many people did they drop the bomb on? Don't take our boys and win on. Take our girls and win on. Don't take our boys and win on. Don't take our girls and win on. Don't take our boys and win on. Don't take our girls and win on. It's time. It's time for drums and bass.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Julia Angwin talk about the many ways that government, private businesses, and criminals can and do collect our private data. Julia shows that because of the pervasiveness of the surveillance system we live in today, we are in danger of becoming a society that self-censors itself instead of demanding our rights.
I'm just going to throw it out there, so maybe you can, if you like it, you can push it as well. But I love your First Amendment argument so much. And whenever I have a hard privacy question, I ask WWBD, what would Brandeis do? Because he's my privacy hero. And I think he would have insisted that the framers believed that a degree of practical obscurity and anonymity was necessary for full democratic participation, and forms of ubiquitous tracking that defeat that expectation are unreasonable searches of our persons and electronic effects. What do you think of that?
I think that certainly Brandeis would agree with that. I think what's interesting, I heard an argument recently that I thought was interesting, which was maybe the Second Amendment should protect us, the right to bear counter-surveillance, which I thought was actually a great idea, right? Because I have kind of armed myself with counter-surveillance, right? And that puts me on a suspicious list, actually. But it may well be that there's a level of anonymity needed for political discourse that would be prevented, would be allowed by this, right? By the fact that I have my phone in a bag that prevents all signals from getting through.
So tell about this incredible Faraday bag. This is the hottest privacy fashion accessory for the spring. All fashionable privacy advocates will carry them. What is this Faraday
bag? So what
bag?
This is basically a bag that's lined with some thin metal, and the metal prevents any signals from getting in and out. So when my phone is in the bag, then it's not communicating with the cell towers or with any Wi-Fi networks. It's really just off the grid. And it saves me from having to constantly think, okay, have I got my location setting on or whatever? And so I just throw it in the bag, and then I'm not trackable. And it's worth pointing out that, you know, you could turn your phone off to do this, but the head of the CIA chief technical officer went public a year ago saying, you know, we can track you even when your phone is off, which basically probably means remotely activating the microphone or some other part of it. And so true privacy paranoids put their phones in bags. And actually, you know, this is something that protesters do, because the cops want to know who's at the protest, and so it's actually commonly used by Occupy and other people.
This is the time for me to use the Woody Allen line: just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. Now, the Faraday bag is a far more stylish alternative to your original approach, which was wrapping your phone in tinfoil.
Yes,
how did you feel when you wrapped your phone in tinfoil?
Well, so I thought I was going to get a Faraday bag, but I was talking to this guy who was an ex-CIA guy, and he was like, oh, honey, you don't need a Faraday bag. You just wrap your phone in tinfoil. I was like, okay, I'll try it. So I spent a day wrapping my phone in tinfoil, and it was really embarrassing. You know, I got to my office, and I was sort of peeling it open, trying not to tear it, you know, and to check something and then put it back in. And by the end of the day, it looked like that very crinkly sandwich smushed look. And my colleague said to me, he said, Julia, I actually know someone who can get you a Faraday bag, so you have to stop doing this because you look crazy.
Where do you get them, by the way?
So you can get them on Amazon. this one I got from a guy who's like an art. He does counter-surveillance art in New York, and it's called the Off Pocket.
We could start up a little operation at the Constitution Center and sell them together. You know, it would be a great little franchise.
The Constitution plus Off Pocket. Faraday, I think that's
absolutely
a great idea.
But now, Faraday bags, obviously some of our audience, well, actually, I'm kind of curious. Based on our conversation so far, who in the audience would buy a Faraday bag?
Oh, right. Wow. We should start this business.
And who thinks that this is just too much and would not buy the Faraday bag?
Okay.
So this is actually almost two-thirds. So it's a hearty and already committed audience here at the Constitution Center today. But I think we have a little more work to do to persuade the non-Faraday bag people about what the harms are. So again, the great virtue of this book, there are stories, there are practical tips about how to protect your privacy, but you really give us the harms. So we've talked about the harms of government surveillance. Let us talk about the harms of private sector surveillance and being tracked by online companies. And I mentioned the great contribution of your Wall Street Journal articles was to reveal that people may be charged different prices online based on who the companies think they are. Tell us about that example of differential pricing.
Great. So what's happening now when you are online is your computer transmits far more information about you than you would think, right? You imagine yourself being very anonymous. But when you arrive at a website, and it's a retailer website or somebody's trying to sell you something, they already have quite a bit of information about you, and they can dynamically change the page to tailor it exactly to you. This is actually marketed to you as personalization and as a benefit. And sometimes it is. When Amazon tells you what books you might want, I'm fine with that. Although the only books they ever tell me are like, you know, NSA, Stasi.
You've got those already.
I already have them all. What I wanted to find out at the Journal in some of my investigations was, well, how is this being used to provide different prices? Because that's what I think is ultimately what I would want to do if I was a retailer. And so we did find, in 2010, we found that Capital One was using this information to change the credit card it offered you as the first, when you just went to their website, they've never seen you before, and it was like, boom, here's the card for you, right? And it was is kind of disturbing because we analyzed the traffic that your website sent back and forth to them, and it said in the traffic, it would say their instant analysis, like low income or middle income, and so the, and how much education they thought you had. Now, let's be fair, you can apply for any credit card you want, right? So you're not, your choice isn't being fully limited, it's only just being scoped, right, as to what we think you might want. But then, in 2012, what we found was that we found Staples was actually changing its prices for everybody, and it wasn't optional, right? As soon as they identified your physical location, they made an instant assessment of how close you were to a competitor store. And if you were close enough, they would give you a better price because they thought maybe you might go to the competitor. And if you weren't that close, they would give you a higher price. And so that was, so you could buy a stapler, an actual stapler. We bought two staplers, the same exact one from two different locations for two different prices and had them shipped to the same location. And this is going to become more and more possible. And what I'm concerned about is, what does that mean? Because of course it's perfectly competitive and legal to do discrimination by price, and economists sometimes argue that it's the perfect pricing. But it's also true that when we looked at the data for Staples nationwide, the people who live near competitor stores are lower income and racial minorities, and they're getting the higher prices. They're living farther away from the stores, right, from the competitor store, so they're getting the higher prices. So I think we may need to rethink what is redlining, what do we want, what do we consider fair in our system, because we're the ability to be unfair is going to increase technologically. And so I just raised the question of where do we want to draw the line as a society of like how willing we are for people to be charged different prices based on their individual attributes.
You show so powerfully this is very literal classification. You were put in one category that Nielsen or someone thought that you were a high-tech spender or something.
Yep.
And then there are the others who are the blue-collar blues, many of whom are minorities, who are charged permanently different prices because of whom Nielsen thinks they are. Should that be illegal?
Right. Well, that is the question we need to confront. I don't think this society has ever had to answer that question. So we have very technical definitions of redlining, mostly having to do with credit and loan applications and racial minorities. And we need to think a little bigger about where else we want to draw those lines. Because the thing about our digital world is that although it seems like when you go onto the internet you can see anything in the whole world, it's also true that you can be trapped in sort of what I call a hall of mirrors, where all you see is what all of those websites think you are, right? And think you want to see and think the price that you should have.
Talk more about this hall of mirrors. You give so powerfully the example of people in the last election who visited Mitt Romney's website only getting Romney ads, and people who visited the Obama website visiting Obama ads. And Julia describes how literally you visit the Romney website and a cookie placed on your computer is auctioned off in real time to a company that earns the right to send you these Romney ads forever. And the result is that we're living in what Eli Pariser has called a filter bubble, where the ads you see and even the news you consume and the entire reality that you inhabit is defined by who the websites think they are. Talk about that filter bubble
problem. So in the last election, I found this incredible example of the filter bubble, which was that if you went to Google and typed in Obama and did a search for Obama, then your subsequent searches, whether they were for guns or abortion or just cats, would have guns or whatever at the top, and then three search results in the middle that were Obama plus whatever the topic was. So Obama's position on cats, right? Three search results, and then more cats. And when you did the same for Romney, so you searched for Romney, and then your subsequent research results didn't have that, right? There were no Romney plus cats. And so I tested this across the country, and I came to Google with it about a week before the election. I said, what are you guys doing? You know, what's happening here? If we at the Wall Street Journal had said, we noticed that you read the Obama story on the front page, so now the story in Personal Journal about toothpaste is going to have Obama's views on toothpaste, we would literally be strung up, okay? So what's the deal? And they were like, oh, it's just the algorithm. The algorithm found that people who read Obama news want more Obama news, and the people who read Romney news don't want more Romney news. Now, that might actually be true, because Obama won, Romney didn't. But is it fair, right? And is it fair for Google to make that assumption for us?
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Mum and Dad and Denny saw the passing out parade at Puckapunyal. It was a long march from cadets. 6th Battalion was the next to turn. It was me who drew the card. We did Canungra and Shoalwater before we left. And Townsville lined the footpaths as we marched down to the quay. This clipping from the paper shows us young and strong and clean. And there's me in me slouch hat with me SLR and greens. God help me, I was only 19. From Vungtau riding Chinooks to the dust of Nui Dat, I've been in and out of choppers now for months. We made our tents a home, VB and pin-ups on the lockers, and an Asian orange sunset through the scrub. And can you tell me, doctor, why I still can't get to sleep? And night time's just a jungle dark and a barking M16. And what's this rash that comes and goes? Can you tell me what it means? God help me, I was only 19. 4 week operation, when each step could mean your last one on two legs. It was a war within yourself, but you wouldn't let your mates down till they had you dusted off. So you closed your eyes and thought about something else. And then someone yelled out, contact! And the bloke behind me swore. We hooked in there for hours, then a god almighty roar. And Frankie kicked to mind the day that mankind kicked the moon. God help me, he was going home in June. Frankie drinking tinnies in the Grand Hotel on a 36-hour rec leave in Vungtau. And I can still see Frankie lying screaming in the jungle till the morphine came and killed the bloody row. And the Anzac legends didn't mention Martin Blood and Tears, and the stories that my father told me never seemed quite real. I caught some pieces in my back that I didn't even feel. God help me, I was only 19. And can you tell me, doctor, why I still can't get to sleep? And why the Channel 7 chopper chills me to my feet? And what's this rash that comes and goes? Can you tell me what it means? God help me, I was only 19.
And now back to Julia Angwin and the Dragnet Nation.
Is it, back to Brandeis, is it consistent with democratic values? Can you live in a society in which we only hear one side of the story?
Right, well, that's the challenge, right? That's why I really felt at the end of all my reporting that the key issue here was fairness, right? It doesn't make you feel like you live in a fair society if you're not seeing your news presented fairly, right? And so I think we need to figure out ways to make sure that we can keep all the fabulous technology, which I love. I love all of it. I want all of it. I want to be able to, you know, log on to my, you know, remotely from here and get my files from home. But I want to mitigate the unfairness that is right now completely legal and ubiquitous.
Another harm, more unfairness, virtual police lineups and Google Glass. What's going to happen there?
So I talk a little bit in my book about what I call virtual police lineups, which is essentially the idea that before all this surveillance was really ubiquitous, there was no reason that a normal person would have a file with their local police department or would be on file kind of anywhere. But now, for instance, local police departments have these license plate readers, and so they drive around and they scan all the license plates that they're driving by and keep them in a file forever in some cases. And that means that they have kind of a history of your location, where you've been parked for the past 3 years, or if you're driving, they also can take pictures where you're driving on the street. They photograph the oncoming traffic and the traffic in front and behind. And so what we found was a guy in California who FOIA'd his, he filed a Freedom of Information Act request for his automatic license plate records, and his little town had photographed him, I think, more than 200 times, including his kids getting in and out of the car in the driveway, and that was on file in the police department, and they're going to keep it forever, right? And so this has changed the presumption of innocence in my mind, right, which is no longer do you have to be a suspect to be surveilled. And I think that the challenge there is that then the police can go fishing in that data to just look, well, did they get out of the car in his, did the kids get out of the car in his driveway in a way that crossed, like, disobeyed some law about, you know, there's so many laws on the book that you don't know, right? It might be illegal to park your car one lot, like, wheel over the edge onto the sidewalk. Who knows, right? So now they have a way to find something on everybody.
Like the guy with the GPS device on the bottom of his car who was stopped because he turned without making a signal. So all of us, when we drive, violate traffic laws, and the Supreme Court has said, you don't, even if it's a pretext, the stop is okay, as if you violate some minor law, and you're saying with all of this data, we're all vulnerable to being...
Right, and I tell the story in my book of a guy who I think is a really compelling example of this. He he's a boiler repairman up in Massachusetts, in Western Mass, and he basically... one day got a notice in the mail that his driver's license had been suspended, and he didn't know why. And they said, you have to come to a hearing. So he went there, and they said, we have this facial recognition program, and it found that your photo looked very similar to this other guy, so we think it's identity theft, to prove who you are, right? So he was basically chosen, presumed guilty, and had to prove his innocence. Well, he was who he was, and their program flagged the wrong people, and they actually accused him. They said, you don't even look like your photo. And he was like, yes, that photo was taken 13 years ago, and I'm 100 pounds heavier now, right? And so, like, this is the debate he's having with the DMV. And so that's what happens in this world where the algorithms are sort of unchecked. And I want to build due process into that, right? He needed the right to be informed far earlier.
Digital due process is a very powerful theme of this book.
Yep.
You, in order to dramatize the difficulty of protecting privacy, spent a year doing a privacy audit on yourself, coming up with a threat model, and then enlisting every available technology to protect your own privacy. We've seen the Faraday bag. Let's talk about some of the other rigors that you endured for the sake of civic discourse. One of the most dramatic of which is you left Google and went to a website called DuckDuckGo. What was that like?
Yeah, so I quit using Google search because I saw how my searches were so revealing, and I didn't want them stored. And even if you don't have Gmail, they're still storing them based on your IP address, which is a level of anonymity. But in my case, if you go to a website and look up my IP address, it basically locates me right in my home. So they can be very revealing. So I decided to switch to a search engine that's actually based here in Philadelphia called DuckDuckGo that is privacy protecting. They don't store any IP addresses and they don't store any searches. So every time I go to them, it's like a fresh new experience. They don't know who I am. So it actually took me a while to learn how to use it because I was used to the idea that Google would finish my sentences. You know, you start typing and then they already know what you want and they fill it in for you. But once I realized that it wasn't that hard to add the word New York at the end of a search just to make sure it wasn't like the Natural History Museum in London, which they love to give me, I really started to appreciate the fact that my searches weren't tailored because I felt I had the control myself over what I was looking for.
They say the world is spinning around. I say the world is upside down. They say the world is spinning around. I say the world is upside down. Oh yes. Oh yes. That is why we should live together. Walking down the street, you can see the signs. Mocking, hate and cheat and love is hard to find. They say the world is spinning around. Ooh, I say the
the world is upside down. They say the world is spinning around. I say the world is upside down. Advance! And I should give no mustache, no beard. You know, you look like my baby. And that ain't fair to my baby.
Dig this.
I was walking down the street one day, just to pass the time away. Before me was a slick looking chick, but eventually the name was Dick. They say the world is spinning around. Ooh, I say the world is upside down. They say the world is spinning around. I say the world is upside down. And as she king, I know my stars no bed. You know, you look like my baby. And that ain't fair. I say, look at you. You look like my baby. You don't know what to do. Ooh, yeah. They say the world is spinning around. I said, it's upside down. They say the world is spinning around. I say, it's upside down. And I think, yeah, no mustache, no beard. Look like my baby, yes, yeah. You know that I know that you do, yeah. That ain't fair to my baby.
Now, messages from Access Sacramento.